The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 14th chapter.
Glory to you, O Lord.
Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up the mountain by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But by this time, the boat, battered by the waves, was far from the land, for the wind was against them. And early in the morning, he came walking towards them on the lake. But when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." He said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat, started walking on the water, and came towards Jesus. But when he noticed the strong wind, he became frightened, and beginning to sink, he cried out, "Lord, save me." Jesus immediately reached out his hand and caught him, saying to him, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" When they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, O Christ.
Please be seated. Well, any of you have been on a college campus recently, maybe you were at the University of Montana recently, you'll probably see, if any students are there, these weird rope things that are tied between two trees and someone walking across them. These are called slack lines. How many of you have seen these on the college campus? Yeah. They're very, very common, and they actually just kind of came into vogue and popularity when I was going to college about 10 years ago. And I remember the first time that I tried to be on a slack line. And it wasn't pretty at all. In fact, you see, the rope is probably, I don't know, about 3.5 feet or so, give or take. And you have to put your foot on the line and then jump on to the rope. And I remember the first time that I tried this, I jumped with such gusto that I basically almost went face first into one of the branches that the tree that the rope was tied to. And my friend who was showing me how to balance on this slack line was extremely, extremely patient with me. And they said, the secret of slacklining. Now, don't tell anyone, okay? So, John, I don't want a slackline in your yard, all right? Just hold off. The secret of slacklining is that you pick an object to focus on, and then you don't take your eyes off of it. This becomes what they call the horizon marker. So you pick a branch or a rock or a piece of bark or a window or whatever, and then when you jump, it allows the slackliner to maintain their balance. In fact, if any of you have seen these high wire tightrope walkers, maybe at the circus or something like that, they use a very similar technique with looking at a horizon marker. And sure enough, now I have to be honest, it did take a couple of tries, but it does work amazingly well, actually, once you get it. I was able to cover actually most of the slack line before falling off using this kind of technique of a horizon marker. Last week, with this gospel story, we talked a little bit about, you know, the courageous nature of Peter getting out of the boat and getting on the water and coming to Jesus. Well, this week, as I meditate again on this same story, I have found myself drawn to the final half of this story, where Peter is on the water and starts to sink. In fact, The Greek alludes to the fact that he actually starts to drown, not just sink, but starts to drown. And Jesus reaching out his hand to catch him and saying, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And I find this question a little perplexing. You of little faith, why do you doubt? Well, doubt what? Doubt God? Doubt yourself? Is God, Jesus, angry here? Is he chastising this Peter for doing something wrong? Or is this more of a reflective type of question? Doubt, I think, is a very strong word in our place and time. How many times have you said to someone, you know, why did you doubt? Probably not very many, I would expect. That's because doubting, I think, is culturally and socially is kind of a no-no word, right? We don't hold up the president for doubting, right? We don't hold up a CEO or community leaders as doubting. Our culture, our society holds up this idea of power, this idea of go. You know, they are assertive. They are ready to make a decision, not to doubt. And so it's probably, I would like to say, that doubting in our time and place comes from kind of two categories, a place of weakness or a place of resistance. I'll say that again, a place of weakness or a place of resistance. And let me give you an example. Well, an example of weakness, doubting as weakness. You know, one, doubting the existence of God for many churches is kind of a non-starter, right? Well, how dare they not know where God is? How dare they don't see God in the world? Why do they doubt? And so it's this idea of they must be weak to not even acknowledge that a God exists. And so maybe there are these folks that think, well, you know, they're so weak, maybe they deserve to kind of be kicked in the pants a little bit. Maybe they deserve to even go to hell. There are churches, there are communities, there are Christians that believe this type of doubt is weakness. Or as an example, doubt as resistance, right? Well, an example of that may be climate change. Climate change is a deliberate attempt to infringe on my freedoms, so I will doubt the credibility of any scientist putting out studies that show our Earth is warming. I will resist and doubt any information that goes against my worldview. It's a form of resisting the cultural norms. Weakness or resistance? Either way, I think doubt is a shocking word, which I think makes this question from Jesus so shocking, almost, to Peter. You of little faith, why did you doubt? But you know, in Jesus' time, doubt didn't simply mean that you are weak or that you are trying to resist something. In fact, it meant something a lot more complex than that. And I think we can get at it with the breakdown of the Greek word itself. The Greek word distazo, dis meaning literally two, double, and tazo, which stems from the Greek word stasis, which means to stand or have a stance. So in other words, the word literally put together means two stances or two ways of standing. An ancient phrase stemming from this Greek word, perhaps that you've heard of, is having a foot in both camps or two camps. So in other words, Jesus understood distazo as this wavering, as this distracted type of state, not a litmus test or a being a rebel just to be a rebel, right? Peter didn't just go out on the water and start to drown because he was weak, or said to himself when he was out there, you know, Jesus is probably not really the guy who he says he is. I'm just going to go back to the boat. I mean, that's silly, right? But I bet you Peter was looking all around him. He was seeing the waves and the thunder. He was looking back at the boat and kind of, whoa, he was feeling the rain on his face. And he was looking everywhere. And Jesus maybe then was noticing how he wasn't focused on what Jesus in front of him was doing. So maybe Jesus' question is simply put, why did you take your eyes off of me? I think this could be a way in which we could better understand maybe this question. Why were you distracted and take your eyes off of me? When do you feel that you have had 2 feet in 2 camps? When have you been distracted and take your eye off the horizon marker? When has this caused you to fall off the slack line? I know it has happened to all of us. Whether it be tripping on a rock you didn't notice on the trail, I know that happened to me quite often when I was in Glacier this last week, or something you didn't see, maybe failing to notice someone's sickness or emotional state. Distractedness happens to all of us. And you know, spiritually, can we be distracted as well? I think you can be spiritually distracted. You know, I always tell people that at the beginning of my college career at St. Olaf, I guess I would have to call myself borderline agnostic. You know, I appreciated church music, and I sang in the choir, and I grew up in the church. I loved liturgy, but I really felt like I had kind of fallen off the spiritual slack line a bit. I lost interest. I just didn't feel, I didn't know where my marker was, and I just couldn't get myself back on. I had this swirling of questions, and it really wasn't in many ways until I met Abby, in many ways having conversations with professors and with the campus pastor, in many ways going to London and volunteering, that I was able to find a new marker, a new way to get back on the slack line. Maybe that horizon point that gets you back on the slack line is different, and that's okay. Maybe you have or are going through right now a similar experience of being distracted and doubting, and that's okay too. Because here's the reassuring thing about this story. Peter not being able to focus and start to sink, what happens to him? He gets caught. Jesus catches him. And that, I think, is the good news. That no matter who you are or how distracted you have become, Jesus will be there to catch you. God will be with you as you get back on the slack line. And maybe your horizon marker won't be what it used to be. Or maybe it will be kind of what you thought, a little bit solid ground, but then it won't be solid ground any after all. That's part of the faith journey too, I think. To sink, to fall, to be caught, to find new ways of seeing Christ as the horizon marker. Distraction and doubt will continue to happen. It's part of life, and that's okay. But thank God, Jesus will continue to be there catching up, being our markers to focus on in every step of life. Amen.
Thank you.